It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along with Daniel Pryor today, and do make note of that slight change. Did you hear it there? Used to be Bellevue and Edmonds. Now it's Kirkland and Edmonds. Kirkland and Edmonds. Well, you got a bit nicer offices in Kirkland?
I've got a great office in Kirkland.
Okay. Yeah. Daniel Pryor, good to have you in studio once again, Daniel. This week, kind of getting back to a little bit of basic information about just what is a life coach and counselor and the kind of services you offer and kind of your general philosophy.
What I do for people.
Yeah.
And that's really when people come in that we get to it right away, and I ask them right out. After they sign a couple of, you know, quick forms, and they are quick. I'm not a paper person, so I ask them, what is it that you hope I can help you with? And we get right to it. And a lot of times people aren't quite prepared for that. They think this first session is going to be about exchanging information and, you know, background and getting to know. But I say to people, at the end of every session, I want you to be able to have something that you take with you that you actually use. So I want to get
every session something practical.
Absolutely. I want to put tools in people's hands that make sense to them so that they actually use it. And there's no point in counseling if you're not going to get somewhere with it. So very practical tools. And, you know, I advertise Bible-based counseling or faith-oriented counseling, Bible-based counseling.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Well, and I've had people say, hey, where's your Bible? You don't have a Bible in the room. Scripture is my foundation, has been my whole life, you know. And, I mean, we all struggle with our beliefs, and Paul says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. It's God in you working to will and to do of his good pleasure. And I certainly am in that ring with everyone else. But yeah, scripture is my basis. That's my worldview. That's my perspective that I come from when we're talking about mental health. The Bible is the lens that I look through. Now, scripture doesn't always come out in the sessions. It well may come out. There may be specific scriptures that poignantly speak to and address a principle that I'm trying to get across. But it's clear in the sessions that's my worldview, and that's my
Some people think that Bible-based means instant healing. Now, that's not the case. Sometimes God bless you if you're instantly healed or instantly can change something. But I think it's a process, isn't it?
It is a process. The Bible, I think, says a lot more about patience than it does about healing.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of it, life is a process. In fact, that's one of the things that I talk to people about a lot is that process follows purpose. So, and I like to say that if people understand the purpose of their life and the purpose of their relationship, that they'll embrace the process. But if they don't understand a purpose, then they'll feel lost in the process. It's kind of like having a roadmap to a destination that you haven't yet identified. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the process isn't much good if you don't know, if you can't kind of plug it into where you're going. But yeah, it is a process. And a lot of what people have to realize is that there are things in life that simply aren't, you simply can't alter, change, but you can change the way that you think about them and change the way that you see this fitting into your life and fitting into God's purpose for your life.
Yeah. Well, people, they maybe come to you and they say, I want you to fix me. You know, I'm broken. I need to be fixed. And again, getting back to I can give you a 3-point plan and you're going to be done by the end of the session. But again, it's a process. Sanctification takes your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, so, but I like that you do come, when people come to you, you do want them to have some practical tools after every session.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to also mention too, kind of when you hear other advertisements saying, come in for a risk-free consultation.
I've had people call and ask, you know, do you do an initial free? That's really difficult in mental health. I was thinking of, I had somebody come to the house to give me an idea of what it would cost me to paint the house. But he didn't bring a can of paint and paintbrush. He's not going to slap some paint up there to show me how he does it. He's not. There's very little that you can really tell in a counseling session. After all, we are dealing with a lot of variables, and we're dealing with personalities and trust issues and all kinds of things that it's not as objective as it would be if you're going to your doctor to see what kind of surgery he performs. Sure. Or that sort of thing. And so you find that when people come, if there's, and there, I've heard no risk, you know, can, is there a no risk? There's always risk. You know, there's all, you know, risk leads to trust. If you don't initiate risk, there's not going to be a value in it. And in my experience, it has been that most people who insist on a free consultation aren't going to be helped anyway. Mm-hmm. And that the free consultation benefits mostly, you know, people who aren't sure they want an answer, and quite often unseasoned counselors who aren't sure they have an answer. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in beating around the bush on that for me. When people come in, I'm have always been able to give everyone at the end of the first session, they already know the direction that they're going to go. And they have some practical tools to put into. And in time, it's structured toward actually giving them a model of life, a lens to look through. But even if it's just merely like when families come in, one of the first things I'll work on is communication, because if people start communicating differently, they can actually see quite a bit of relief in the family dynamic. Mm-hmm. So we may be working on a bigger picture and things, but I still like to give people things at the end of, you know, during each session, that they can actually take that home and say, even if it's a different way of looking at things or understanding things or something practical that they put on the refrigerator and work through or something like that. Yeah, so I try to do that every single. I don't want anybody walking out thinking that tune in next week for the punchline.
And I think a lot of times people, too, they have a heart. Of all the kinds of services, it seems to be the idea of paying for counseling seems to be kind of foreign to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And yet it's some of the most important work I think anybody can do is get, like if you're having marital problems, you need a third party to get in there and talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. And not somebody who's just throwing one-liners in there. And, you know, I mean, you need some real professional help a lot of times.
Yeah. And there are a lot of good counselors, but the truth is that like anything, most are average. Mm-hmm. That's just the bell-shaped curve for us, and it's in everything in life. So, you know, most of the counselors are average. There are some that are better, and there are some that are worse. But they're not all equal. There are different approaches to counseling. Some that benefit one type of person, some that benefit others. There's kind of a what you used to call the Rogerian, and maybe some people still, but it's client-centered, where the counselor does a lot of listening and just reflecting back. I've never really found that. That's not popular with me. Mm. I don't think it would be as a you know, if I go to a counselor and I'm paying the person money, just like if I'm going to a doctor and paying the doctor money, or a mechanic, and, you know, when they get the car back, or when I get back out of the doctor's office, I want to have some information that I didn't have when I went in, and mm-hmm. I'm paying for that person's expertise. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I work. I know that's not the way all counselors work, but that's the way I work. I feel like people are paying me money, whether it's their copay or we're on the sliding fee or whatever. That's their skin in the game, and mine is that I do have a model that I look through, answers that I use in my own life, not just book stuff, but things that I use in my own life, things that are, you know, tried and true with me, with my family, and clients that I've had over the years, many years. I think that's one of the things that I think probably benefits me is the amount of years that I have in this. You know, right now, well over 20 years mm-hmm. Under my own shingle, and mm-hmm. did counseling in churches and things before that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of experience. And I've seen a lot of things.
And nothing against pastors, but and I guess there are a few pastors here and there who have some real expertise in counseling. But that really isn't a pastor's profession. A lot of times is counseling, mm-hmm. and a lot of times people think they should get all the counseling they need from their pastor. And you would say Unlikely.
And I think pastors get burned out trying to do that. You know, the pastor is leading a flock, and if the pastor takes too much time, on individuals, he will get burned out. Particularly, I mean, I've known some really good pastors who have very small flocks. I know a dear pastor in Tacoma that has about 10 or 15 people. They meet in his home, and he's a wonderful man, and he pastors each person.
Yeah.
Spends a lot of time with each person. But if you've got 200 people in your church or 2,000 people in your church, you simply cannot do that. Mm-hmm. Probably not as good at it as people who, and there are Christian counselors, you know, and one of the things I've enjoyed doing over the years, when I was in Tacoma, I had a mailer that I sent out to about 250 pastors. I did it for a while when I moved up here a few years ago, but I think that mailing list grew to something like 300 pastors around the Puget Sound area. And that was the entirety of my advertising. I didn't do phone books or anything. It was just referrals to pastors. Mm-hmm. I got to meet with the pastors. I got to know them. They got to know that I had a pastor's heart, that they knew what their people were going to be getting when they came to me. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that I always appreciated, being able to be a part of the church, because actually that's how I got into counseling, was coming up to the church and recognizing the need in the church, getting training for it. But really my heart has always been the health of the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm. And your heart too is, sounds to me like more of a directive kind of counseling. Again, you're not just going to listen to people spout off and say, well, that's okay, you know, and just kind of like you say, repeat back to them what they're mm-hmm. saying. If you hear some buzzwords or some key words that are indicating some real unhealthy mm-hmm. choices, you're going to call them on it. You're
trying to point it out. In fact, a lot of one of the things that I've also done that's been very effective is if I have a married couple, for example, or a family situation where people are in, and I'll just have them, they'll bring an issue. Well, you know, we were arguing about this, and I'll just say, let's talk about it right now and solve the issue right here. Mm-hmm. Not only to get the issue resolved, but also to learn how we can resolve other issues. And then I'll actually let them discuss it, and I'm coaching and pointing out. I'll stop them in the middle of something, and I'll say, did you see the expression on his face change, or did you see the expression on her? And that signals this. Okay, go ahead. Mm. And then they're back into it. So just bringing corrective information and just pointers through that. So, it's in clinic, you know. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, some of the heart of life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor today, talking about his approach to counseling and his approach to life coaching. We'll find out what the difference is there, if there is any, when we come back from a break, and also some of the most common kinds of things that Daniel seems to be encountering currently in sessions. Daniel, if people want some help from you, they're already sold. They know they want to be involved in a counseling format with you. How do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can phone me at 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169. And I also, people email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
More details as well at KCISradio.com. We'll be back with more of the Sound Mind Show with Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Christian marriages are being attacked as never before, from outside and from within. Today more than ever before, you have to be proactive, learning to better be aware, to be more caring, and to be better communicators, recognizing and dealing with problems that are from within, from without, personal or relational. And that's where I can help you. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland asking Daniel what he means by life coach and counselor and some of the most common issues he seems to be dealing with in his practice these days. Okay, Daniel, what is the difference between a life coach and a counselor? You do both.
Well, I do both. And some people actually specify that they want coaching. And a lot of times what they mean by that is that maybe there's a career change coming up, or they want to maximize, want to understand, like, you know, where should I be putting my energy. Life changes. I see, for example, a lot of young people that are just getting married or just have gotten married, and there's some career changes, and sometimes they might come in for coaching. I've seen people that
coaching
are
a marriage,
coaching
a marriage.
Yeah, or okay. Or maybe the young man is just coming in for coaching, and you know, okay. I'm married, want to make sure I get out of the blocks right. I might have this career move. It could uproot the family. You know, so it's kind of like a decision. I've had older men or my age and gals that. Again, career change, maybe retirement or something, and you know, what's a healthy way to go about that, and that can involve talking about how to, you know, make sure I've got, you know, a good social network and social community. You know,
so
in which to retire.
Life coaching kind of is more to deal with career then, and maybe goal setting.
Can be goal setting, but there's it crosses over because a lot of times people will say coaching. And they actually have issues that anxiety and those kinds of things. There is some stigma. They would rather be, if they're telling their friends, I'm going to see
a counselor.
You know, they would rather say a life coach sounds yeah, kind of a little more politically correct.
Well, what about the midlife crisis? Would that be a counseling situation or a coaching situation?
Well, from my perspective, it doesn't change. It would be, you know, I would. Whatever it takes for me to be able to put tools in that person's hand, if they want to call it coaching or counseling, I think a lot of people might come and if there was confusion one way or another, they'd probably say counseling because the insurance company probably won't pay for quote unquote coaching.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Life coaching probably isn't covered by insurance.
Yeah, but from my perspective, a lot of times it's the same, unless it's just absolutely clear that the person is coming in for something you'd consider to be, you know, just strictly a coaching issue. So, yeah, from my perspective, it doesn't change that very much. Even when I'm counseling someone, I am kind of a coach in my mind. I want to give the person a model, a lens to look through so that they can begin to manage their own life and make their own decisions.
A game plan.
Yeah.
A game plan, some plays, a playbook.
Yeah.
You think of the things
kind of
with a coach has a playbook. He has kind of some things to work on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And I think that's probably because I tend to be a visual person, and I've actually got some things drawn out for people, cycle of addiction chart, things that I've constructed. One of the topics that comes up a lot in whether it's coaching or counseling is life perspectives and, you know, your world either getting larger or smaller, which, you know.
And I've seen some of your graphic stuff.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah.
So those things, that's a model that I introduced, you know, the life getting larger or smaller. I can be talking to a person that suffers from anxiety and depression or a person that's at life changes and wanting to know, you know, where's a good model for for life.
Well, so let's kind of move into what are some of the top subjects that you seem to be, people seem to come to you for?
Yeah, well, communication is obviously one of the main ones that couples, as they would come for, would be. They talk about communication. They talk about trust issues. On the individual level, probably anxiety, depression are probably the ones that, you know, people, there are words that people use, buzzwords that they use. And when you get into talking about anxiety or depression, you find out that there are, you know, causes for these things. And so you start talking about this sort of branches out. So you're talking, you know, can take you back to some of the models that we've talked about, but they will come in and the reporting problem, as we call it, would be anxiety, depression, addictions, people, or anger. I guess if you were asking for five, you know, anger is a big one. Addiction.
Anger management.
Yeah.
Anger management. Just like the TV show, Anger Management or whatever. That's kind of funny.
Well, one of the things I do with anger is that's pretty unique is that I have a pretty broad definition of anger because my experience with anger and in teaching anger management has been that in order to actually get a handle on anger and actually master it, you have to recognize anger when it doesn't look like anger because we're actually wind up practicing anger quite a lot when we don't realize what we're doing. Mm. And so that's another teaching tool, teaching people to analyze themselves and, you know, through this definition of anger. And then addictions, and those are roads that kind of merge because anger and addictions go together.
So actual substance abuse kinds of addictions or more behavioral type addictions, would you say?
Both can be substance, can be, you know, viewing pornography, can be gambling, can be spending, you know, those kinds of things. So just behaviors, habitual behaviors that we're trying to get rid of, you know, the sin that so easily besets us, mm-hmm. you know, was the one that, you mm-hmm. know.
Well, I've heard some statistics saying that anxiety, I don't know, maybe anxiety, depression, I think it's just anxiety is the going to be like the number one health concern as we head into the future. I've mm-hmm. heard statistics forecasting that. Why is our society so anxious? That's a big question.
Yeah,
but
yeah. And if we say, you know, our society versus maybe other societies from
more
the past.
More so, yeah, with our society. Yeah. Yeah.
And I just think that our society is rooted in what I, in a model that I teach where life perspectives, there's a lot when I'm, there's a perspective that's called the external where I'm pursuing value, control, and power through acquisition and achievement. Mm. And that to me just really defines Western civilization, pursuing value, control, and power through acquisition and achievement. If somebody else has a new car, I have to get one. If somebody's got a better job, I have to get one. I got to, you know, it's keeping up with the Joneses.
So is it purely a materialism kind of thing?
I think it's materialism, mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. And what we're striving for, again, in the life perspective is a perspective where I understand that ironically and paradoxically, the only way that I really attain an inner sense of value, control, and power is through surrender. And living with my life center somewhere else besides in myself. And that's something that we're not taught. In fact, a lot of the self-help materials talk about doing it for yourself, you know, feeling good for yourself, even forgiving yourself and things like that. And it's all centered back on mm-hmm. me, which kind of repeats this, you know, kind of just takes me around the cycle again of mm-hmm. Anxiety and depression. So, yeah, mm-hmm. That's certainly – and anxiety is in all kinds of addictions and anger and emotional and family dynamics and relational difficulties. So I can see that, you know, it's just that.
So you see individuals, you see couples. Do you ever do family counseling?
I do family counseling. Mm-hmm. I have done a lot more in the past. And when I was 20-some years ago, I did exclusively – family and children. So I do some of that. It's not the, I find that I wind up seeing a lot more individuals and a lot of married couples. And really for family, I've always believed that time spent with the parents is the most valuable because I've known for a long time in counseling families that the children really want their parents to be the champions, that mm-hmm. it means a lot to have what your parents say turn out to be true.
Yes.
That is such an anchor. So so a lot of times a counselor can do damage by stepping in and being the hero. And it really can actually make the problem worse. A counselor really needs for the parents to be the hero. So I like to spend time, even if I'm doing family counseling, mm-hmm. My focus is quite a bit on the parents. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you work much with children, just children one-on-one, or is that's not...
Again, I did that early on in kind of what I call the revolving door industry when I was working in the public sector. But probably, you know, at this day and
age, maybe more teenagers.
Yeah,
if anything.
Teenagers. Mm-hmm. Uh huh. Yeah, mm-hmm. And in that regard, once again, I sort of come alongside. I don't want to become the parent,
right?
But I'll come alongside and. You know, I turn out to be someone that the child can, you know, come and talk to about things but I want them to be talking to their parents too. And I'm always happy when they're coming and reporting, dad said this or mom said this. And I'm trying to, follow in that instruction. So that,
how about premarital counseling for a couple?
Yeah. Premarital counseling. I like to do that. But it's a bit of a frustration, and I'm sure it is for pastors who do premarital, because they're just not listening. They've got their eye down the road,
okay.
and they don't. It's like buying a new car, and they say, "Well, before you drive the car off, let's go over, you know, the warranty."
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Who really listens? You know,
yeah.
You know, just give me the keys. And so, so premarital counseling. Until people hit some bumps, they really don't think it's going to happen to them. They're different, you know. Mm. So. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot in premarital counseling, and I wish people would come in and go through what I call the family of origin, you know, a genogram, family of origin things, and recognize that you're going to, you see, you're marrying that person's past. And I think that that's something that people don't realize, that that's part of the bargain. You marry the person's past. And a lot of times when I'm dealing with married couples, someone will say, well, that's just his past or her past. But, well, now it's your past, too.
You married the person's open. Past. You got to have your eyes open.
And the relationship is about carrying that burden and heal and bringing the person to healing. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't your fault, but it's your problem.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I know some of the, we had some premarital counseling, my wife and I, and he did some basic kind of personality tests, and mm-hmm. it was a real eye-opener. Mm-hmm. Really helped us prepare, and again, going into it with your eyes open. So whether it's getting through a rough patch in your marriage or as an individual, life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor is ready and willing to help you. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, call me at 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169. Or people also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Locations in Edmonds and now in
Kirkland.
In Kirkland. Yes. Used to be Bellevue, but mm-hmm. Edmonds and Kirkland now. And Daniel would love to help you. Always great information on the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.